Welcome to Mobile Estate Planning with your host, Michael Bailey. Over a decade ago, attorney Michael Bailey turned his attention to estate law after he recognized the unacceptable number of adults without proper end-of-life planning. Michael recognizes that many of his clients have difficulty finding the time for making a proper estate plan. That's why he became the Mobile Estate Planner. He will go to wherever you are to assist you with your estate planning, including writing wills, trusts, and giving you the information you need to avoid probate. Now, ATX, Ask the Experts, presents Mobile Estate Planning with your host, Michael Bailey.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Mobile Estate Planning with Mike Bailey here on 560 KLZ, The Source. Also heard on 100.7 FM. And 95.3 FM, 1220 AM, 560thesource.com, and the TuneIn app. Phone number to talk to us on the air is 303-477-5600. And my direct line is 720-394-6887. So we're just going to just dive into stuff. I've been working on something for somebody, and we were, talking about different various aspects of estate planning, and someone said, well, what are the worst mistakes you've ever seen? And, and what's the worst advice you ever got? And, what's the best way to what's the best way to not work within estate planning? So what's the best way to upset your estate planning attorney? What's the best way to not work with an estate planning attorney? And they're like, okay, I thought that was an interesting topic, and I'm like, well, let's talk about that. Let's see how it works. So the easiest way to not work with your estate planning attorney is to not call them. Seems pretty simple, right? Hey, I want to do this. I want to do this estate planning thing, but I don't want to work with an estate planning. So I want to just not call them. And do you know what happens if you don't call me as an estate planning attorney? I don't do an estate plan for you. Works out nicely. I'm like, all right, you don't want to work with me. You don't call me. I may or may not know who you are. I've got a whole bunch of people that I know who don't have me do their estate planning. And there's lots of reasons for that. One reason is that they already have somebody who did their estate planning. Another reason is that they didn't want to have, they didn't want me to do their estate plan for whatever reason, whether they thought I was too expensive, or they thought that they could do it on their own, or they didn't think they had anything, so they didn't think they needed an estate plan. All of this is kind of one of those things that you're like, all right, well, if you don't want to work with me and you never contact me and never say, hey, I want to do this, okay, we can accomplish that. That's fairly simple. Good to know. We can make that happen. Okay, so we can figure that out. Cool. And that's fine. People who want to work with me, I would like to work with people who want to work with me. I don't want to work with people who don't want to work with me. Because when we end up, if somebody doesn't want to work with me and feels like they're forced to work with me, then we have fights. I actually had a client a week or two ago, where I had gone to meet with them a month and a half ago, and we sat down and we talked about what they wanted to do with their estate plan. Now, this woman, I'd gone to visit her in skilled nursing. It was her and her husband, and neither of them was doing particularly well. And at various times, I think that the mom fell asleep, so she may not have heard every single word of our conversation. But we did make sure that we brought her up to speed and made sure that any of the conversations she did miss, we talked to her about. But then we got to, I had everything printed and ready to sign, and I got there, and this woman became very agitated, very upset. She was pretty sure that we had never talked to her before, and that we were just trying to do what we want. She says, oh, just whatever, typically just whatever you want to do, and doesn't even matter what I want to do. you know, don't even care about what I think. I said, okay, well, this is what it says. It says that we would like to, you know, that you'll leave everything to your husband, and if not to your husband, then to your kids. Is that what you want to do, or is that not what you want to do? Oh, I can't decide right now. You're making me decide right now. So we have to, you know, I have to think about it. I said, okay, how long do you need to think about it? She says, I don't know. I'm like, okay, well, why don't you think about it? Well, I have your husband sign things, and then we'll go from there. And then so we had the husband sign things. And then she began in telling me that she, you know, that her husband didn't know what he was signing and that we were forcing him to sign things. And I'm like, okay, I explained to him what it said, and we went through it. We made sure he had read it and understood it. But she was pretty convinced that we were trying to pull a fast one on her and her husband. Now, the people in the room were this woman, her husband, her son, and me. So she kept calling me all sorts of unpleasant names like Mr. Fancy Suit, Mr. Insurance Man, and things like that. I'm like, okay, I can put up with name calling. I've been called names before. I can take it. It's not that big of a deal. But it was almost like she had it in her head that, and you know, my understanding is that she's kind of in the beginning stages of Alzheimer's/dementia, so she's a little bit paranoid. And so, you know, this kind of gave me a little bit of pause about whether or not she had mental capacity to be signing this thing to start with. And, you know, well, I suggested that might be a problem to the son. He said he would have her, talk to one of the doctors, and, you know, the doctors could do a cognitive test to see where things were at, if she was just being belligerent and cranky, or if she really just didn't know what she was doing. Because, you know, in that case, we're like, well, we probably ought to figure that out, because we don't want to try and make somebody who is, we don't want to try to have somebody who is, mentally incapacitated. We don't want them to be, you know, signing will. That's not going to go well. It's just, you know, no matter what you do, it's not going to end well. So we've got, you know, things to be concerned about, which, you know, makes sense. We want to be concerned about doing things right. That's what we're trying to do here in our estate plan, is do things right and not screw things up. You know, one of those deals. But hey, you know, if we want to screw things up, hey, I can screw things up with the best of them, I imagine. So you know, in that case, we're like, you know, so there was pauses, and she didn't want to work with me. I'm like, okay, that's fine. So that's a good way not to work with you, is to be belligerent and tell me that you don't want to work with me. Makes sense. And if you don't want to work with me, that's okay. I will honor your wish of not wanting to work with me, so we don't have to. So easiest way is just to not call and not want to work with me. So you are listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560 KLZ, The Source, also heard on 100.7 FM, 95.3 FM, 1220 AM, 560thesource.com, and the TuneIn app. Our phone number in the studio is 303-477-5600. And my direct line is 720-394-6887. So if you decide you do want to call me and we do want to work together, I mean, I'll say this a lot, and I tell people this all the time. They're like, well, how do I pick an estate planning attorney? Well, pick one, or an attorney in general. You want to pick one who you're comfortable with, who you get along with. Now, I think I get along well with most people. Not everybody. You know, there's a couple of basketball coaches out there in the state of Colorado, who, you know, I referee high school basketball. So I've had a couple of coaches who have crossed the line of decorum, and they, you know, they yell and scream and gesticulate, and I've even been sworn at. And so, you know, that those people, I tend to get them to, you know, in my special referee way, by blowing my whistle and putting my fingers together in the form of a T. And that's a technical foul. That's a sign for it. And then they get to sit down. Those people, yeah, they get a little bit upset at me. They may not get along well with me. And, you know, I can totally understand that. So we go, okay, well, we've got a person who, you know, but most people I get along with. And that's okay. I'm perfectly fine with, you know, I get along well with most people, which works for me. So, you know, that, you know, if you don't like my sense of humor, well, then we may not get along particularly well. And if we don't get along particularly well, if we don't, then we're probably not going to work well together. It's just kind of how it goes. Now, most people who are like not going to get along particularly well with me, we can usually find ways around that. Our interaction is, we'll talk about what you want and how we want to get your things taken care of. We can talk about, you know, what your vision for everything is and how you want to have things come through and how you would like your assets distributed, who you'd like to be in charge, who you'd like to be able to make decisions for you. All of those things, all those things are there. All of those things are what, you know, we're talking about. So, I've had clients where I thought we were getting along and I thought things were going well, and then something kind of went wrong. And so we ended up finishing things off, and then we kind of parted, went our separate ways, and we haven't talked to each other again. And that's fine. I still did my job. I just still did my job properly. I still took care of them. I still got an estate plan put together that is legal and legally binding and properly executed legally. And so we've got those things done. Okay, cool. Sounds good to me. Does that sound good to you? Yep. Cool. Moving on. Because, we don't have, some of my clients, I have like ongoing kind of long-term type of relationships with them, and we get along well and we're happy. And I have some clients who consider me to be their surrogate grandson. Or I had one of my favorite clients, she got mad at me for about 6 months because my youngest son had been born. He's five now. But I didn't go to visit her for about 6 months because I was busy with other stuff. And she called me one day and she's like, "When are you going to come visit me? I need to see my new grandbaby. You're holding him out. You're holding out, not bringing him to me." So, that's a one type of relationship that I can end up having with clients. It's not a required relationship. If we have a professional relationship where we are able to do business together and then move on, that's fine too. But I always like being able to work well with people. Now, I have a lot of people who are, they like to ask me, "Well, what's the best way to do this? Well, is one way better than another? Well, you tell me what I should do. And you're the one that knows, so you have to tell me what I need to do and I'll just do it." Now, those people, I kind of understand where they're coming from, but I also feel that it's my responsibility to say, essentially, "I appreciate your confidence in me. I appreciate that you want me to take and make decisions for you. However, if I make all your decisions for you, that's not going to work out well. You don't really want me to make your decisions for you. You may think you do, but probably you don't." And I think there's a couple of reasons why people have that misunderstanding. I think some people believe that in the law, there's this, long laundry list of, okay, in this situation, you do this. In this situation, you do this. In this rule, if this comes up, then you do this. Where there's one rule for every situation that might come up. And it may not be that simplistic that people are thinking of that. That's almost the concept that people are talking about. And to me, just from my side of things, that's not the way the law works. When somebody asks me, be like, "Oh, well, what does the law say happens? So if we create this trust and then my son dies and my daughter-in-law wants to challenge the trust, and so she challenges it, but I still have my grandkids, but the trust says the money is supposed to go to the grandkids. What does the law say about what the daughter-in-law can do to come and challenge the trust?" And I'm like, "Really? That we had like 18 different conditions right there. And you're wondering exactly what the law says about that." And I say, "Well, generally, if a trust is leaving something to some person, then it will go to them." "Yes, but the daughter, I don't want her to be even able to challenge it." Okay, well, now here we've got, the great, you can't write anything that won't or cannot ever be challenged. Everything is challengeable. Whether or not they win, that's a whole separate game. But the idea that there's one law or one sentence somewhere that's going to cover exactly what's going to happen in that situation, it doesn't exist. So I will explain to people, "Hey, we've kind of got general rules, we've got general principles, we're trying to fit into the principle, But if you want a specific rule about specific everything, that's not quite how this works. You know, one of the things that the United States Supreme Court, you know, in general, they're only supposed to decide cases that have specific facts and circumstances in front of them. And, you know, they're not supposed to issue kind of like advisory or, you know, kind of overall kind of blanket opinions. That's not how they work. But statutes are written to be blanket and apply to all sorts of situations. And even when a court issues a ruling that's based on specific facts, it will couch those facts in terms of here's the general rules of law and here's how we're applying them. So we have somewhat of an idea of how general rules of law get applied, but the specific law, specific facts, specific outcome, and no variation, that doesn't really exist. But some people who seem to think that exists aren't really sure that they want to work with me because I say, hey, you know, we might want to look at this and say, okay, what are the general rules? So I usually will turn things around. People say, oh, well, what should I do? I'll turn it around and say, okay, here you go. Here's the benefits and drawbacks of each approach. Here's how it fits in your situation. Which one would you like to do? So basically, if you're not okay with making your own decisions and you're not okay with being able to have me empower you to make an informed decision, we're just not going to work well together. So if you want somebody to make decisions for you and it's not, and you know, I won't do it, well, we're in a lot of trouble. So another way to work poorly with your estate planning attorney is to think that they're going to do absolutely everything for you and make all your decisions for you. Okay. Well, you know, if you're not like that, then we can work well together. So you are listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560 KLZ, The Source, also heard on 100.7 FM, 95.3 FM, 1220 AM, 560thesource.com, and the TuneIn app. Phone number to talk to us on the air is 303-477-5600, and my direct line is 720-394-6887. So, you know, another misunderstanding of people wanting me to make decisions for them is that there's like only one way to do things and only one way that things should be laid out that's the best way, and they want to know what the best way is because there's only one way and that's the way it has to go. So in this case, I hearken back to and think about my wife, which, you know, makes no sense whatsoever, but it will in a minute. So my wife is really bad at like colloquialisms. She botches them all the time. She'll say things like, one day she said to me, well, you know, it's like killing five birds with two stones. I said, really? Is there a bush involved? Because we're mixing and matching our cultural idioms. You know, so what's it supposed to be? Kill two birds with one stone, right?
Or a bird. I thought it was something about get two birds stoned at the same time.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, see,
I get them all mixed up.
Right, see, I tend to not get them mixed up. My wife screws them up. So she said, yeah, we're going to kill five stones with two birds. Or, you know, okay, so we're going to kill five stones with two birds. You do realize the stones are already dead, correct? And the birds are alive, so this may not work very well. And that's why I brought in the bush, because, of course, the expression is there's a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush, which means if you've got something already, you don't need to get rid of it to go chasing, you know, in the words of TLC, don't go chasing waterfalls. Stick to the rivers and the lakes that you're used to. You didn't see the TLC reference coming, did you?
I did not. That was good, though.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And, you know, with Lisa Lopez having passed away, we don't get much TLC music anymore. You know, when your lead singer dies, it's bad for things. So my wife, one day she was at work and she was with her boss, and her boss was talking, you know, my wife was an accountant. She was with her, you know, accountant manager, and her boss says to a boardroom full of people, well, you know, there's more than one way to skin a cat. And my wife was absolutely horrified by this. She's like, why are you skinning a cat? What did the cat do to you? Did you kill the cat first? Why would you want to kill a cat? And why are we taking its skin off? I don't understand. And how would my educated, you know, very good at her job boss say something like this to a room full of executives? And why is nobody reacting? So she asked me, so she was telling me this story that night, and I said, so there's more than one way to skin a cat is an expression that means there's more than one way to do something, or more than one way to solve a problem or approach a problem. She said, oh, that makes so much more sense. Well, yes, yes, it does. So when I have an estate planning client who says to me, oh, well, what's the best way, or what's the way that we need to do this, or how can we do this? I say, all right, let's stop for a second and let's talk about what the approaches are. Again, the benefits and drawbacks of each approach and which one you're most comfortable with. Now, some clients I have, they want to set everything up so that they don't have to go through probate. That's very important to them that they don't go through probate. Okay, so we will usually use some sort of trust planning there, where we put together a trust and put everything in the trust, and then when somebody dies, the successor trustee takes over and distributes everything out. That's usually how we do it. But I also have clients who they don't want to go through probate, and they have an IRA account. IRA account has beneficiary designations, so the beneficiary designations will transfer ownership. They will transfer the amount in the IRA to the beneficiaries upon their death. That passes outside of probate, so you don't have to go through probate. And then that same person who has the IRA, they also own a house. So the house, being real estate, is going to end up most likely in probate. So they're like, oh, well. And so sometimes they'll say, well, if the house is the only thing you have that's going to go into probate, I don't know that we necessarily need to do trust planning, because we can take and we can use a beneficiary's deed for a house, beneficiary's deed for real estate. And a beneficiary's deed basically says, it's essentially a transfer on death deed. So what it means is, if you have a beneficiary's deed, it says, okay, when the person who owns the house dies, then upon their death, we're going to transfer ownership to these people who are our beneficiaries. Okay. And so you file that with the county. You have to file with the county before somebody dies, not after, as one of my clients found out when they didn't record the beneficiary's deed for months until it was like a year and a half that they had it and didn't record it. And then the guy died and they're like, oh, should we record it now? I'm like, yeah, you might be a little bit too late. So that's one of the things about a beneficiary's deed. It should be recorded before the person dies. There we are. So we go, all right, well, okay, we need to fix this. And, you know, what do we do? So with the beneficiary's deed, the house was going to transfer outside of probate, because you can just file a death certificate with the county and an affidavit to show that the person has died and that ownership now needs to be transferred to the beneficiaries. Okay, that doesn't go through the probate process. You can do that at the county clerk and recorder's office, which changes title and changes ownership. You know, that works out. Okay, so we do that. Cool. All right, well, now here's the thing, is that if we've done that and we've now accomplished the goal of avoiding probate, there's two different ways to do it. You know, some people are more comfortable using the beneficiary's deed. Other people are more comfortable using the trust. And, you know, there may be a price difference between the two. I had a client once who had $50,000 in cash and a house, and they wanted to do a trust. And I explained to them that you could probably do the same thing using a beneficiary's deed. And she said, no, my kids are going to fight, so I don't want to do it that way. I want to make sure that I have a trust, because a trust is going to be harder to challenge. And we can put a no contest clause in a trust that's more enforceable than in a will. And that's what I want to do. Now, the price difference was the trust was roughly going to be double the expense for doing the will and the beneficiary's deed. And at only $50,000 in cash in a house, I was kind of trying to push her towards the cheaper option. And she was like, no, I want to do it this way. That's the way I want to do it. I said, okay, you are the client. I will, you know, follow your wishes. I'll do what you want. And we'll do the best we can to get you taken care of. Now, you know, I explained to her the benefits and the drawbacks of each approach, and I had her make her own decision. So basically, if you don't want to make your own decisions and you want me to make them for you, we may not work well together. If, however, you're willing to listen to what I have to say and understand why I'm trying to get you to do what you want, then we will work together. So you are listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560 KLZ, The Source. Also heard on 100.7 FM, 95.3 FM, 1220 AM, 560thesource.com, and the TuneIn app. Now, my other favorite one, that the best way to come to me and where we aren't going to work together, is if you come to me and you're like, well, I was doing a little research on the internet and I read that XYZ. Or my brother-in-law told me that XYZ. Or my sister said this. Or my other favorite, my mom and dad did this, so I want to do the exact same thing. Okay. Now, what you may or may not have read on the internet may or may not apply to your situation. You know, sometimes people are like, oh, well, what about a life estate? I'm like, life estate's not going to be super helpful, because life estate doesn't apply in your situation, because what you're trying to do is protect an asset instead of accomplish something else. They're like, oh, well, I guess I must have misunderstood that and read it wrong. Sure. Or, I've had people like, yeah, best example I can think of is when I used to do tax resolution work, and someone's like, well, my brother-in-law said all you have to do is file a protest and send the IRS a letter, and then they won't charge you taxes at all, because you'll be exempt. So, and I'm like, well, that's not how it works, because of this and this. Well, why would my brother-in-law have said that? What, do you think you know better than him? Do you think you're better than him? Why do you think, well, why would my brother-in-law have said that? I think I calmly responded, I'm not entirely sure why your brother-in-law said that. I'm not entirely, you know, for some reason, I'm not him. I can't read his mind. I cannot tell you why they did or did not say that. It might have been based on a misunderstanding. It might have been based on a conversation they overheard, that they didn't understand all of it. There are so many explanations that I can't even begin to go into what they all are. So if you insist that somebody else has told you something and they must be right, and I cannot possibly be right because I'm just the attorney, then we're not going to work well together. Otherwise, we can. So you should call me and we should talk about estate planning for your own personal situation. Or, you know, if you don't want to call me, any other estate planner, I'm sure that these type of things get on their nerves too. So thanks for listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey on 560 KLZ, The Source. John Rush and Rush Reason up next. Stay tuned and we'll talk to you later. Thanks and bye.
Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey will return to ATX next Wednesday at 2:30 here on KLZ 560, The Source, AM 560, FM 100.7, and online at 560thesource.com.
Views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.